It's the unthinkable. Nearly 1 million Rohingya refugees have been driven out of their homes and villages in Myanmar into neighboring Bangladesh. It is by far one of the world's largest humanitarian crises today.
The Rohingya are descendants of the ancient Southeast Asian kingdom of Arakan. Its borders face the Bay of Bengal to its west, the Indian subcontinent to its north, and Burma proper to its east, isolated by the Arakan Mountains and accessible primarily by sea.
In the 8th century, Muslim traders brought Islam to Arakan, where the religion spread. In the 18th century, Arakan was conquered by the neighboring Burmese people.
Until recently, the descendants of the Arakan, now known as the Rohingya, lived isolated from the majority Buddhist population in what is now called the Rakhine State of Myanmar.
But Myanmar denied Rohingya the right to citizenship. Their basic rights to study, work, or access to health services were severely restricted. Beginning in 2012, Western leaders started to take notice.
In Rakhine State, we see the danger of continued tensions there.
Then, in August 2017, tensions between the Rohingya and the Burmese boiled over. Rohingya rebels attacked Myanmar security forces. The military quickly counterattacked.
The violence against civilians has forced more than 500,000 people to flee for their lives.
Hundreds have been killed. At least 200 villages have been burned to the ground.
The word is genocide.
We must shine a spotlight on these accounts of ethnic cleansing.
This is the story behind the catastrophic humanitarian crisis affecting Southeast Asia and the story of the people trying to help the Rohingya.
Look around me. This river, it's part of the border between the nation of Bangladesh and the nation of Myanmar. It's a short distance from the Rohingya refugee camps. And this is one of the border locations where many desperate Rohingya refugees, under the most unthinkable conditions, cross this river, fleeing for their lives. There are about 1 million Rohingyas here in Bangladesh. They're living in very tough conditions with very uncertain futures. Not every Rohingya was able to escape to Bangladesh. Many, numbers unknown, were murdered, slaughtered. The United Nations has identified these vicious acts as ethnic cleansing. You've heard the phrase, never again. But those words ring hollow here. It has happened again to the Rohingyas.
They came, one of the groups, to our village and then came to our markets, and they looted all of the expensive things, and then they set fire.
Also, they come into our village and shooting the everywhere, just firing, like shooting the like this, on fire. No meet, no discuss, no question, just shooting.
When Mohib Bula's village was attacked, he traveled for 8 days to reach safety.
I have heard that there was killing, shootings.
Yes.
Killings with machete.
Yes.
Rapes of women.
Yes.
Do you know anybody who was killed by machete, shot, or raped?
Yeah, a lot of people we know.
When they brought in our villages and their market, that time I saw with my own eyes.
Did you see anyone killed with your own eyes?
Yes. One of the my villagers also killed on the way.
What, running and got shot?
Yeah.
Kasim was a school teacher in his home village where he can trace his family history back at least four generations.
My family is also one of the brothers who were killed by the Burmese government.
So you're taking care of your brother's child, yeah. Sister-in-law, your brother's wife?
Yes.
How do you deal with this?
I love him very much. No, I am taking care of him. He is my daughter's child.
Why do you think that the Myanmar military did this?
The government trying the whole country to be Buddhist.
So this is a religious dispute?
Religious. It is a religious thing. They're trying to be Buddhist country. All will be Buddhist.
I heard several stories like this, claiming that the attacks were religiously motivated, Buddhist on Muslim, and calculated to drive out the Rohingya. No government confirms that story, but the Rohingya here believe it.
I had to leave my children in the midst of firing and chaos. What could I do?
So she was in her home when the military of Myanmar showed up. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
What happened to the village?
The village was burned. As the houses were set on fire, a lot of the people could not get out. Some were hacked to death or their bodies were lit on fire. Little children were thrown away violently.
How did you get separated from your two children?
In Myanmar, our home was attacked suddenly by gunfire. That moment, I escaped through an open door, and I grabbed one of my children who was close to me. Soon I saw my whole house was on fire. I do not know what happened to the others. There was no way to know who was shot or who was butchered. I could not find out.
I just can't even imagine how hard this is. I almost don't know what to say to you. I'm at a loss for words.
My son was 5. My daughter, 7.
What's her name, in case anyone is watching?
Shahida.
And what is your boy? What is your son's name?
Mahmoud Hassan.
So for now, the new home for the Rohingya is in neighboring Bangladesh, the Kutupalong refugee camp. What was once a lush forest is now a sprawling slum that reaches out for miles.
I had no idea how big it was going to be, so seeing just how huge the camp was, just on and on and on with all of the people. That was kind of my first impression, was just the huge scope of it. Like, I'd heard about it. You see the statistics, you see the numbers, but to be here in person and seeing how extensive it is, that's something completely different. Like, once you get in, besides just looking at the physical stuff, looking at, like, the people, the feel of the camp when I walk through it, there's just this sense of a lot of people that are just kind of surviving, not really living, just kind of getting by day to day.
An initial settlement of refugees already existed here, but after the violence in August of 2017, the camp started to grow by enormous numbers. When they arrived, the Rohingya had no homes, no shelters, no source of heat for cooking, but what the land held was trees. And one by one, they were cut down. The trees that held the hillsides became campfires and shelters that now stretch to the horizon. Kaylin Briggs is an American who has worked in 5 countries in the last 5 years. She is now with World Vision, a relief agency which is active here. She has seen the growth.
When we had this massive population influx last August, we had to expand the area where those people were living. So what we're in now is called the expansion camp. So it's basically a much larger camp that's built sort of around the original site.
Any idea what the population of the expanded camp is? About
it's over 600,000.
Of the expanded camp, that would include the original camp too?
That doesn't include the original camp.
So, oh, it does not?
No. So if you include the original camp and all of the little bits around it, we're up to around 900,000 people. So this is the largest refugee camp in the world.
But they are cut off. They cannot leave the camp. Officially, the Bangladesh government has even put restrictions on the sale of SIM cards to refugees for their cell phones, citing security precautions. Formal education is not allowed. Some organizations sponsor language lessons for children, but not in the local trade language, Bengali. Though there is little to do, there are few sources of entertainment. No television, limited internet, and only weak radio signals with little information in the Rohingya language. Since refugees don't have work permits, they are officially not allowed to have jobs. It's fertile ground for the breeding of extremists and terrorism.
We often say in these types of emergencies that idleness is one of the biggest threats. When people have too much time, when they don't have the opportunity to work or do things, that's when we start seeing risks go up in camps.
Kids are kids, and they try to keep busy. And while the Rohingya may not be able to fill proper jobs, it doesn't stop them from working. You do find some computers in use here and there, but I'm told that their usage also requires permission from authorities in the camps. So no work, no schooling, no movement, not much of a life. No one, not governments, not relief workers, and least of all the Rohingya themselves, knows how long they will be here and when or if they will ever be able to return home. And there's more. Another pressing, potentially disastrous enemy has come to the Rohingya.
Here comes the rain. We can go there. Can I get under your thing for a second? This is what the million Rohingyas in this refugee camp are having to put up with. This is the monsoon season. This is a crisis on top of a crisis. It is raining like crazy. It's not going to stop raining. This is no ordinary rain. This is a monsoon. And what's happening, what's already happened, is there are mudslides. But that's not where it stops. I mean, look, here's a latrine. But the latrines are filthy. And what happens is they make the water filthy. There's water running all the way through. You can see the water underneath me. It just doesn't stop raining. And it's just a breeding ground for all sorts of diseases. You've got cholera and so many other diseases that come when you have filthy water. And that's just the beginning. But how can anyone expect these people to get food to live? How can you expect their structures to stand up? And now the structures are literally going to wash down upon each other. Bridges are washing away. This is what the spotlight needs to be put on, because these people are desperate. But it's only going to get worse.
The danger is clear to relief workers like May Sepan of Food for the Hungry and Medical Teams International.
Essentially, their settlements are built on what appears to be sand dunes, because they're deforested lands that have no way of protecting the population against the monsoon rains. And so it's very likely that most of these settlements will get washed out as the rains increase and the storms become more intense.
We identified something like 200,000 people are at risk from landslides with this heavy monsoon. It's almost like a race against time.
Shelley Thackrow gave up a career as a journalist to work in crisis environments just like this one.
We've been trying to really move families as fast as we can to flatter, safer land, so relocated to a part of the camp which has been flattened, but also so that safer shelter can also be built.
The constant rain would strain a first-world infrastructure, let alone a makeshift camp. The water builds, pools, and seeps into everything, and sets up a potential for danger to the vulnerable refugees.
And as the rains continue, the toilets are overflowing into the wells, and so many more of the clean wells will become contaminated as rainy season continues. With that, we get major outbreaks, infectious outbreaks such as acute water diarrhea, possibly cholera, dengue fever. There's quite a few different outbreaks that we are worried that might occur.
I walked the camp with Rebecca Derry, the country representative for Samaritan's Purse, a U.S.-based Christian relief organization. Dozens of agencies from all over the world, including the United States, have sent teams to the camp to help the Rohingya. They're providing medical care, shelter materials, food, and dozens of other relief services. The camp is too large and the need too great for just one agency to handle it all. They've split Kudupalong into a number of smaller camps where individual charities take responsibility.
What is this camp called? Where this is still the Camp 12?
Yes.
20,000 plus live here?
20,000 plus.
And you can see how all the houses or homes are built into this hilly terrain. So when the monsoon starts in earnest, it creates a horrible danger.
Absolutely.
So what's to protect these houses from pancaking on top of each other?
Nothing.
Nothing at all. Has anyone died so far from the mudslides, as far as you know?
Yes, we had a child under 5 die 2 weeks ago from a landslide.
What happened? I mean, what do you know about it? I mean, in his home or?
His home was crushed from the slide.
Where's the rest of his family?
I don't know.
How did you find out about it?
We get reports about all the things that happen in the camps. And so it was one of the things that was reported, unfortunately, that we lost him.
What efforts are being made to protect these families from these mudslides? I mean, I don't know that anything can. I mean, they've lifted all the trees here and built them into homes. They've used everything, so there's nothing to hold the soil in, even if it would withstand the monsoon.
That's right. So they are trying to move people out as quickly as possible to areas that are a little bit more stable, but it's a slow process and there's not a lot of place to put them.
But even do the people want to move again? I mean, they've already been run out of Miramar. I mean, this, as horrible as this has at least become home. You know the person who lives next door to you.
Mm-hmm. They're making an attempt to move people in family groups so that they still have that feeling of placement. But yeah, it is really hard to uproot a second time and move somewhere else.
And I notice over here that there are bags. I assume that's an attempt to prevent a mudslide.
So what you're seeing there is that's places where there were homes and they have been taken off so that, because that's a high landslide area. So these little spots where you see, that's where people have been moved out.
All right. So when people get moved out, they take their homes?
Yeah.
What is, like, look at all this huge roof-like area over this. What is it?
So this is an attempt to keep the sand from coming down. So they are also planting grass. They're trying to plant grass so that it will stabilize the soil a little better. And they put bamboo and tarp over it to keep it from falling on these lower houses.
Oh, yeah. Take a look at this. This is incredible. This is where a house probably was. And they move the family out. I'm stepping over this bamboo. They move the family out, and then they take the house and get rid of the house so no one moves in. But take a look at, you can tell there's just a cliff with a little bit of rain, the monsoon, you know, that whatever is here is just going to slide right down on top of these other homes. I don't know why these places don't burn down in fires. I mean, coming down these steps is actually treacherous. It's unbelievable how dangerous even these steps are. It's very slippery. You can see that I can stretch it. Here's the house, and at the other end of my hand is the cliff. So you know what's going to happen when the rain comes, when this cliff gives way. This house is going to go tumbling down on top of those other homes. This is a very narrow passage, and the rains, I mean, if you've never been in a monsoon, I mean, it's not like your ordinary rainstorm. It comes down in buckets, and water literally washes away the land.
Now that the rains have come, it's a race against landslides. Several organizations are working to move families to safer ground. I met Michelle Bornstein from New York. She works with CARE International over in Camp 16 to relocate who she can.
We did a site survey that recognized that of the shelters, there were 810 that were particularly vulnerable to mudslides. They were, you know, on overhangings, they were in gulfs, they were in really risky places. But not all of them could get moved. So only about 460 of them could be.
So 400 are still at risk for them.
So 400 of them, we gave them extra shelter materials to just try to mitigate a little bit against some of the slopes.
But, I mean, it's a daunting task. I mean, look at these hills. And we've been through, you know, we've seen what the monsoon has done. It washed out a road that we were on today and just in a short order. I mean, the monsoon's going to go for months. These 400 families still at risk. It's not academic. This is pretty serious.
No, and beyond that, you know, some of the households that we didn't think were at risk were destroyed in last week's rain. So households that we didn't think were particularly vulnerable had mudslides that weren't anticipated because we didn't quite understand the way the land would work, what the soil quality in all the different areas was.
Do you have all the money and supplies you need?
No.
This is a new era?
Yeah.
Are they building their own houses?
So essentially what happens is that we give materials and we give training and then we lend support to vulnerable households. So most households build their own, but, you know, women-headed households, households with elderly or children-headed households, we have laborers do most or all of the construction.
While I was in Camp 16, I met Fatima. When her family fled from Myanmar, her husband was killed. Her son lives in the camps, but is so traumatized that I'm told he just roams around aimlessly. She was helped by CARE.
When we first reached Bangladesh, we took shelter at the bank of a river, but there was land erosion. Then some representatives from CARE told us that there were some new shelters being built further inland. They advised us and then helped us move here.
But for every person like Fatima, there are dozens of others needing immediate help. The needs come flooding in every day, every hour, every minute.
I mean, just take a look at this. Since the time we came into the camp just a short while ago, the monsoon started pouring water in, and this road has now washed away. But it's not just a matter of fixing the road easily. This is a crisis because take a look at down here. Look how soft this land is, and the rain is pouring in. So every time you turn around, there is a more dangerous situation that has arisen. Take a look at this road. They're trying desperately to fill it with soil, do something, but who wants to get on a car or even walk across it when the road is so narrow and is giving way like this and is pouring rain? And it's not just a matter of getting into the camp and transportation. How do you think they're going to get food in here if they can't bring a truck in here? How are they going to get medical care, medical equipment? Every single moment, the crisis builds.
This is interesting. Here comes an ambulance. Before I was talking about how dangerous it is, how do you get cars in to help people? This is an ambulance. Hello, sir. It's very dangerous up there. You might want to drive slow. I don't know if you can go or not. They say that, but I don't know. You'll be the first to go through, and it's pretty narrow. Why don't you get out of the car and go look at it?
I have a patient already.
You have a patient in there? Do you have a patient in there?
Yeah. And I have a patient.
Where are you trying to get it to patient to? To the hospital right there. We're up on the hill? See, this is what the danger is. This is an ambulance. And when I'd say something new happens every 5 minutes, before I was talking about how the road washed down, how dangerous it was. Now we've got a patient in an ambulance trying to get to the hospital up there. And this road is supposedly repaired, but even my own weight, I can push the soil down. Wait till the rain comes. I don't know what happens when heavy vehicles go through. Every time you turn around, there's another bigger crisis, and you wonder, how much more can these people endure? How much more? And it just doesn't stop.
For the refugees, it's a perfect storm. Persecution, mudslides, idleness, disease. While there is much that is good that is being done here, this camp has also become a target for those who would come to prey on the Rohingya. The Kutupalong refugee camp in Bangladesh is just across the river from the home of the Rohingya. The Myanmar military has driven nearly 1 million Rohingya to this camp.
Textbook ethnic cleansing.
The international community has condemned the government for the violence against Rohingya civilians that amounted to what the United Nations termed as ethnic cleansing.
Every woman or girl I spoke with reported having either endured or witnessed sexual violence.
It is imperative that the international community take decisive measures to address this grave crisis.
Most have little or nothing to go back to. Their homes and villages have been destroyed.
We are struggling. We need resources fast.
It's a humanitarian crisis, only made worse by the monsoon rains. The Rohingya here are caught in limbo. They cannot have jobs, there are no schools,
there are few sources of information. They sit idle, unhappy, and largely dependent on aid supplied by international, governmental, and non-governmental organizations who have sent good people to help. But besides those who bring relief, others are drawn to the camps to take advantage of the crisis. As so often happens, the victims are victimized a second time. Most vulnerable are women and young girls who are targeted by traffickers to be lured or taken and used for forced labor or sex.
I discovered traffickers after sunset. 5 o'clock, there is no foreigners and no locals allowed.
I met with a human rights activist in nearby Cox's Bazar. Ali Kabir had worked in agriculture his whole life. He says he could no longer remain silent while others were suffering at the hands of some Rohingya who themselves had fled years before.
Only old Rohingya, those who are registered here, since 1978, 1991, old Rohingyas, they are staying in Bangladesh. They know everything. They know every rules. They are very familiar with Bangladesh culture. Human traffickers hiding them. And they go inside the camp and talk with the families, convince them that they were going to provide a good job, better future, better life abroad, and better opportunities like this.
So the people that are involved in the trafficking are Rohingyas who have been here in Bangladesh long before the latest exodus of Rohingyas from Myanmar?
Yep.
So you're talking, the population that's doing the trafficking are Rohingya who have been here in Bangladesh for a number of years?
Yes, they are the become a broker of the big trafficking network.
How do they get the women out of the camps? Because the Bangladesh government won't let the Rohingyas leave the camps. I mean, the Rohingyas who came over from Myanmar in the last year and a half can't leave the camps. So how do the brokers get them out of the camps?
Well, ma'am, I tell you, here in Bangladesh have no system in checkpost. They check only Bangladesh NID card, national ID card. And the human traffickers obtain a fake national ID card.
He also showed me pictures of the women he says were victims.
So she's a Rohingya.
Yes.
From the refugee camp. Yeah. And they were going to sell her or bring her out of the country.
Yes.
What was she getting paid? Do you know? And what was the offer?
Offer was providing her in a beauty parlor job abroad, Malaysia, Thailand, and providing her, you know, in a job in a factory.
Did you ever speak to her parents or her family?
Yeah, I speak to her parents. They was very in shock after they learned a real story, real thing.
So they thought there was a legitimate deal that she was going overseas for this career?
Yes.
Did any of them get emotional?
They just requested me not to tell this thing to the other people because her future will be dark.
Future in terms of getting a husband or future employment?
Not husband.
Husband, really?
And a husband, and the community will not let them live in peace.
So it's a very much a cultural thing as well, isn't it?
Yeah, the people who are going to insult them, they will not get a well respect, and they will not get sitting with the other relatives. They're going to hate her. They will look at her in a very, you know, in the bad eyes.
Are Rohingya families protesting about this or complaining? Are they saying anything if a member of their family, you know, goes off into some sex trade?
Well, ma'am, where are they going to protest? There is no any proper place where they can go submit a complaint, where they can go seek a legal process, where they can go seek justice, where they can go.
I was in a forced marriage for 8 months. I was told the army could take me away by force.